I think a lot of people are intimidated about creating apps and SaaSes and things like that, but it's incredibly lucrative based on the valuations and the services. And even though there's thousands and thousands of apps, they're very saleable, very scalable, very friendly valuations. So for people that are listening that have not yet gone into the world of software development, but are interested in it, if you didn't have anything but an idea right now, what would you do to get started in software?
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. Welcome to the show. This is producer Darren Clark, and today Roland talks with serial entrepreneur Oliver Schmalholz, who is not only a tech wizard, but a brilliant deal maker. They discuss his background, their new partnership, Unicorn Equity, and what to do and where to start if you have a brilliant software idea. This is a really great episode, and we hope you get a lot out of it. And if you do, we would really appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to share the show with your business-minded friends.
Hey, everybody, Roland Frazier here. Welcome to this episode of Business Lunch. Today we have my good friend, Oliver Schmalholz. And Oliver, when we were talking earlier, I was asking Oliver, I said, well, what company should I say? And then I was like, well, you got too many companies. So I'm just going to let you talk a little bit about what you're doing now. You've got some cool projects, one or two that we're working on together, and a bunch of other ones that I don't even have any idea probably about. So welcome to the show, Oliver. Would you tell us a little bit about you? And let's start.
Thanks a lot for having me, Roland. Excited to be here. So I'm Oliver Schmalholz, originally from Germany and
currently in Mexico.
Yeah, I've been traveling full time, but had a little, 5 months pause to that, but now trying to resume it slowly. And yeah, been an entrepreneur for over 20 years and been jumping between a couple industries. So part of me being a synthesist, I don't like to get too detailed in a single industry, really keep it to a couple of core themes that I have found to work extremely well in the past, and then apply that in different businesses.
So some of the things you've got right now, you have a news-related thing, right?
So that's an analytics company that came after running an investment partnership for a number of years, having developed a news algorithm, essentially a black box that automatically makes trading decisions. It was interesting how I got into that. It was out of frustration dealing with my stockbroker. I figured I could do better than this in an automated fashion. So a couple of my old telecom partners and I, so that was the first big industry I was in. After we had a couple nice exits, we had a bunch of cash there sitting around, and I was dissatisfied with the long-term buy and hold in the stock markets. And we developed a process to leverage data, essentially take news and analyze it faster than a human being, and then turn it into a buy or sell decision. And we scaled it to almost 2 billion a year in transactions, a portfolio turnover every, 1 to 2 days, so pretty short hold times. But we kind of maxed it out from a position size and what we could do with our capital. So it was either becoming licensed and starting our own hedge fund or getting into a data play. When I looked at the Dodd-Frank Act, all the regulations and hiring a compliance officer and putting all those safeguards in place, that looked pretty bureaucratic to me. So the other monetization, making a data play out of it, looked like it's the better path, and that's what I did.
Now, your latest thing is Unicorn. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, that's super exciting. So that's the deal Roland and I are working on, and that is combining the power of affiliate marketing and turning that into equity deals. So for a company, a product owner that has a recurring subscription product, it's a alternative funding source. So instead of going out to raise venture capital, you were able to bring some of the best marketers in the world on board that you could otherwise never afford. And they're going to promote the product or service to their list in exchange for cash and equity. So it's a pretty exciting concept and nobody's ever done it before.
So now in that, walk me through an example. So let's say that I am a company and I've got a product that's $100 a month, so $1,200 a year. Let's say it's $1,000 a year for an annual subscription, $100 a month. And I want to get people coming in. I want to get customers. And so I don't have any affiliates now. Is that something that I would come to this program and look for those people to help me get customers?
Yeah. So not just affiliates, but all kinds of promoters that could be influencers on social media, mm-hmm. bloggers, YouTubers, anybody with an audience that is a match for your product. And typically, you know, it's pretty hard to get the big movers and shakers unless you have relationships with them. They're pretty selective. If at all they ever promote any third-party products and services, you've got to have relationships, and it's a long path, you know, getting them to promote your product if you're new to the game.
So it provides a way to access people that you might not otherwise be able to access then, correct?
You'll be able to access the best marketers in the world that otherwise, you know, you would never reach, and they're able, you know, to share your product with their audiences as part of the Unicorn platform.
And then if I do that, one of the options would be that it doesn't cost me cash. So like normally, if I'm in a 20, 30, 50% or more affiliate relationship, I'm only seeing about half of the sales, you know, the dollars of sale that come in, then I've got my cost of goods sold that come out. And that can leave me with a pretty narrow margin, even though I'm getting customers and I'm growing. So this also, it sounds like, could provide, if I've got the product, that could provide me with a means of having better cash flow as well. Does that make sense?
Totally, because the equity piece, obviously, you're not paying out the cash piece. That is long-term compensation. So it's optimizing your cash flow. And the other thing the equity piece does, it opens the door to those world-class marketers that would never just promote it on a cash basis only, no matter if it's, you know, 40, 50% or even more. They're just not interested in a short-term compensation. They're interested in long-term wealth. And that's what this model is really about, you know, turning a, you know, marketer, an affiliate, a blogger into a venture capitalist, being able to build their own portfolio companies and have a number of companies in a portfolio that they're building wealth in.
That's great. And so let's run through my example. How am I going to determine, let's say that company, I have that company that's got the products, $100 a month or $1,000 a year. I sign up on the platform and I want to get affiliates. How do I determine how much equity I have to give away and all of that sort of stuff? Is that something the platform helps with in some way? It's just a little confusing for me.
Right. So the starting point is a valuation. What is your business currently worth? Okay. And there's industry comps, how, you know, subscription SaaS businesses are valued. And that's the same approach Unicorn is taking here, taking standard industry comps. And growth rate and churn goes into the formula. Okay. And then we come up with a valuation that works, you know, for you and works for Unicorn. And then we agree, for example, you know, for 20% in equity, we're going to, you know, triple your business in 18 months. So there's a clear revenue number associated with that, what Unicorn is going to deliver, and that's risk-free. So if Unicorn never delivers it, you're not out the equity. So that's only if you physically, you know, got the MRR that was agreed upon in the term sheet and then in the transaction paperwork. So back to that transaction. So let's say there's 20% allocated in total, you know, equity for all the Unicorn promoters. Then the Unicorn promoters will go out and promote the product and service. And each of them has the ability to select how much in cash and how much in equity they want.
Okay.
So if somebody wants 100% in equity, you know, that's possible. If you want to do an 80-20 or 60-40, you just move the slider over and you get paid exactly the way you want.
Okay.
And
that's very cool.
And the platform does all the accounting because it gets quite complicated with cap tables and, you know, cash commissions and matching that all up. So it has an analytics engine that does all the accounting for the product owner and makes it accessible to the promoters, to the affiliates and influencers and bloggers.
That's really cool. And when is the program launching? When is it going to get its first sight of daylight?
So we currently have the early registration open, and we're talking to a number of product owners that are a good fit while the rest of the platform is still coded up. So we're currently working on the whole analytical engine to display all the data properly and have all the tracking with all the third-party platforms. So once all of that is done, we will start doing the first couple deals. So by the time this podcast comes out, we might already be doing the first deal. Yeah,
that's awesome. I love it. So let's go into the software a little bit, because I think a lot of people are intimidated about creating apps and SaaSes and things like that. But it's incredibly lucrative based on the valuations and the services. And even though there's thousands and thousands of apps and marketing technology and fintech and all those other things out there, they're very saleable, very scalable, very friendly valuations. So for people that are listening or watching that have not yet gone into the world of software development but are interested in it, you've got a tremendous amount of experience in it over the years. And I'd love to hear your insights on, if you didn't have anything but an idea right now, what would you do to get started in software?
So it all comes with experience. Once you understand the full life cycle of software development, you're able to do an MVP, a minimum viable product, pretty much within 90 to 120 days on any new product or service you want to roll out. Now, if you don't have that experience, I know people, you know, that have taken a year and a half or two and they still don't have a product. They're still struggling and they think they can hire a couple of Upworkers and, you know, have them piece together a solution on WordPress. Well, that's not a scalable SaaS solution. So if I had to do it all over again and start completely from scratch, I would probably go to somebody with an audience that doesn't have a SaaS solution yet, doesn't have a recurring product yet. And I would approach them and say, hey, let's partner.
Okay.
I'm going to build a team that will create this software solution, and you're going to take one-time revenues and turn that into a recurring model with your audience, which gets a much higher valuation than, you know, single products. I mean, you've done it with multiple of your businesses. Mm-hmm. And then it always starts with the specifications and the design. The more time you spend up front thinking about the end picture, the less you're going to spend on development once you start coding.
Okay.
And that's probably the biggest mistake people make, is they spend too little time starting to code right away, hiring a programmer and get started without really thinking it through.
Tell me this, because a lot of people do advocate, and I've seen courses on, you know, how to make a software product and things like that do advocate going out to an Upwork or some, you know, Rent-A-Coder or whatever. What's the downside to that? Like, why do you, because you mentioned it as a mistake. Why is that a mistake?
Well, if you go too quick and if you don't know what your end picture is, the first person you should really hire, if you have never done product development, and again, this can be an Upworker on a part-time basis for a couple hours here and there, the first person you need is a really good product manager that understands asking all the right questions to come up with the high level specifications and then actual user stories.
Is that different from a project manager?
Yes. So a product manager is visionary and makes sure you deliver these great features and is an advocate of the customer.
Okay.
Versus the project manager then comes in once you have defined all of that, your vision and what do you want to create. The project manager is the one that takes the specifications and turns it into an actual product.
Okay.
But they're more dealing with developers and defects and processes. So that's internal stuff and not visionary.
Okay.
And so either you have a visionary or you have a transactional project manager that's task-based. Over the years, I have found very few of my team members in that role that understand both. A couple months ago, I hired a great product / project manager that understands both. She's okay. Terrific. She has worked in fintech with products with 2 million users. So if your starting point is the product manager, then get a few hours and get some user stories, do some user interviews. And then once you have the specifications, then you can move to a project manager. And then, Roland, then you know what to build. And then you know how to scope it. What kind of talent do you need? And then you can go on Upwork and hire front-end and back-end developers. Now, there's something called full-stack developers that can do both, front-end and back-end.
And what do you prefer?
In my experience, I have seen the best success hiring really good back-end developers and really good front-end developers and dividing it into two pieces.
What is the difference? Is one like UI, user interface type stuff, and one is the processing on the behind the scenes?
Right. So front end is what you can see on the web or on a mobile app, what is touchable, anything you interact with in the user interface. And then the back end is the part that interacts with the database. And if you build that right, it can be very scalable if you put it on the right infrastructure. Or if you build it wrong, you might have long load times. And if you put on a lot of users, you might have a problem scaling the business. And the part I left out is the UI design part, which you just addressed. Mm-hmm. That typically comes before you start coding. If you have a really good designer and a few of the best designer I've ever worked with, I found on Upwork. So there's great talent.
Okay.
And then they typically put it in a mock-up application like Zeppelin, where you can see how it looks and already click on a few things. And then once you're happy with that, then it moves into a development.
Okay. So I've heard product manager, project manager, UI designer, front-end developer, back-end developer. Is that kind of the team?
Right, but then you also need a QA tester on top of it because you don't want developers do the testing. And if you got all those pieces working and then you need a really good project management software, and Jira is the leader in that space, and then you can track everything accordingly, and then you're able to do like an agile process where you move in 2-week sprints, and you don't want to get too involved, let your project manager run with it. And that's really the taking a step back as the entrepreneur or business owner and letting the team just develop and then looking at the end result.
So what would you say is the best way to build that team, as far as do you hire that product designer first and then ask for recommendations for them? Or what would the process be that you would go through to build this team of six people, it sounds like now?
Yeah, Upwork is a great starting point. I always ask for referrals. LinkedIn is a great recruiting tool, especially, with the costs have developed onshore in the US, you have to go offshore, at least for parts of it.
Right.
So I run a hybrid model. Parts of the development team is here in the US. Parts of it is in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And I've had great success with that part of the world. Number one, the time zone works really well. Mm. And also the business understanding, while there's very talented developers in India, I have found them struggling with business specifications in the past when I tried it a couple times. And I don't have that in Eastern Europe. And so LinkedIn is a great tool, you know, to pretty much find people anywhere in the world. If you look at a couple, you know, similar companies in that space, it's great. You know, if you have a part-time recruiter, which you can find easily on Upwork as well, somebody that knows how to reach out to people if you don't like to do it yourself, you're able to find people, you know, with the same stack experience. So you will have to make a decision, what kind of programming language do I want to program this in, and then hire your team according that. Right. And then there's a couple, you know, paid, you know, recruiting platforms. So I let my wife handle the recruiting. She's really good at it. And then we got a series of, you know, interviewers until it makes it to me, and then I'll make the final decision.
That makes sense. So the last thing I'll ask you about that is in budgeting. So somebody that's getting started, how would they figure out the budget? And I know that's a big question, because of course it depends on the project, but is there a method or a formula for kind of figuring out roughly what a project might cost?
So if you're an inexperienced entrepreneur when it comes to software development and you're doing it the first time, cost can completely get out of control. I've seen people spend $1.5 million to $2 million before the product is ever ready. Yeah. If you do the right process and you're building your MVP in 3 to 4 months, you're able to crank out a product for 75 to 100 grand with that team size. And that's sufficient to go into the market, collect feedback, and then, you know, keep building on the MVP. The mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make is they put too many features into the MVP.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the time gets longer and longer. So if you narrow it down to, you know, what's really required, the one or two center, you know, features that really make a difference, focus on that. It doesn't have to look super pretty. Yes, user interface is important, but don't spend 3 months, you know, making stuff look pretty. Get it out, put it in front of users, collect feedback, and then it'll be, you know, paid users give you such a different feedback from unpaid when you go through the, you know, initial interview questions.
Yeah.
So saving a lot of time, getting your MVP out to actual users, asking for the credit cards, that's super important to get it out quick.
Nice. Very cool. So tell me, for those people who might like to get a hold of you to find out more about all of the cool things that you're doing, including the Unicorn project that we're doing, what is the best way for them to connect with you?
Sure. So we can go, they can go on Facebook, Oliver Schmalholz. That's S-C-H-M-A-L-H-O-L-Z. They can shoot me an email at oliver@unicornequity.io or register for the early access at unicornequity.io. And I'm also on LinkedIn. So I'm sure the audience can find me.
That's awesome. And we were talking, since you are an avid traveler, about some travel hacks. Before we sign off, why don't you share a few of your favorite, maybe your top three travel hacks that you've discovered you think would be helpful to folks listening?
Absolutely. I haven't paid for an international first class or business class ticket in 20 years. And some years we've taken 3 or 4 trips, others just 2. And that's you know, for the whole family. Getting into the mileage game, just putting all the company expenses on whatever best bonus credit card, getting all the sign-up bonuses. I mean, it's getting a little tougher. But a few years ago, for example, Citibank had some American Airlines Elite MasterCard. Mm-hmm. My wife and I, between the two of us, we got 1 million American Airlines points out of that card. I think we got it 10 times until Citi finally said enough is enough. You got enough of those cards.
Really?
That's so funny. Credit card sign up. And from the second cart, they kept asking, you know, what do you need another one for? Well, I got another business that I like to keep my expenses separate on. Okay, here's another cart.
Nice.
So that's a great way, you know, to travel for free is just those credit card sign-up offers and just putting all the expenses on. Love then it. Hotel-wise, arbitrage. I love to do arbitrage, pay for cash when rates are low, and then redeem the points when you can get 4 or 5 or more cents per point on redemptions.
Right.
So that's an awesome way. And then, you know, getting those big suites in the hotels. To me, it's all about relationships, you know, building a relationship with the GM, especially if I'm returning to a destination. If you got their email address or even cell phone number, they can do a lot of things if they like you and you treat their staff nicely. And that's probably the number one thing I learned when I talked to a corporate trainer at one of the big hotel chains. I said, so what is it really a hotel wants from a frequent guest? Is it that you're a good tipper or you leave good reviews? And she said, no, it's treating everybody on the staff nicely. That makes all the difference.
And so how do you make that connection with the hotels, the key people at the hotel?
Oh, well, Elvis, engage in conversations with they're pretty easy to spot at the good GMs, do their walkthroughs in the morning and I'll, just approach them. If they're not proactive, I mean, a lot of times I already have their, they reach out to me pre-arrival, either through text message or an email. But if they don't do that, they're pretty easy to spot, especially in the mornings when they do their morning walkthroughs. And I'll just get up. Hey, I'm Oliver Schmalholt. And they introduce themselves. And here's my card. And we've gotten some great benefits out of that.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, Oliver, thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show today. And I'm very excited about the Unicorn Equity.io project and all the other fun stuff that you're doing. So just want to say thanks. And I'll look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thanks a lot for having me, Roland. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. If you're enjoying the show, let us know by subscribing and leaving a review. And for more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you, hungry for advice, proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.